This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of March 17th, 2005.
I freeze! Police!
Bad Cop No Donut!
Bad, 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 bad.
Cop, 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 cop.
No, 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 no. Donut, 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 donut.
Because I'm the law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for an interview with Patty Gilman, whose brother was killed by a Vancouver police taser last year and who gave a deputation to the Toronto Police Services Board shortly before their decision to approve the purchase of 100 new stun guns. We'll also listen to an interview focusing on police brutality at a January rally at Toronto's York University. But first, let's take a look at what the police did to us this week. A former police officer in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, pleaded guilty on Monday to receiving child pornography over the internet. A report in the Hardin County News Enterprise says that Officer Brian Lesor admitted to receiving over 600 images. He faces up to 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine when he is sentenced in July. Lesor has also been charged in another court of possession and distribution of child pornography and indecent exposure. Lesor came to the attention of his fellow officers last May when he was accused of exposing himself to a busload of schoolchildren on three occasions. He was later arrested after a search of the officer's home turned up over 1,200 pornographic images showing children in violent and sexually explicit acts. He was fired from the police department at that time. A retired provincial police officer in La Malbaie, Quebec, was arraigned on Tuesday on 19 criminal charges. 10 of the charges are sexual in nature, and of 7 alleged victims of the officer, 3 are minors. A Canadian press report says that Raël Lajoie is charged with sexual assault, obstruction of justice, assault, and uttering threats. One of the officer's victims was a fellow officer, and some of the offenses are alleged to have been committed at a police station.
We spend far too much time talking about how much we pay for light bulbs or, you know, how much we pay to have our plants watered. And then you look underneath some of this and there's $5, $10, $20 million just going unchecked.
An access to information request made by the CBC has led to the revelation that since 1998, over $30 million have been spent settling lawsuits against the Toronto Police Service. The mayor of Toronto has decided to order a review of over 8,000 cases in light of this information. In recent years, the Toronto Police have been sued successfully for brutally beating people, using women as bait to catch rapists, illegal detentions and strip searches, and other violations of law and department policy. Settlements have included both cash payouts and public apologies for police behavior. A police officer in Richmond Hill, Ontario, has been arrested and charged, along with her husband, with possession of a controlled substance for the purpose of trafficking after a search of her home found a grow-op, including undisclosed amounts of marijuana, cocaine, other drugs, and paraphernalia. A report in the Toronto Sun says that Constable Nadine Marcos was charged after her husband was discovered with drugs at a traffic stop and the couple's home was searched. Marcos was released and ordered to appear in court on April 17th. A police officer in Rodell, West Virginia, has been arrested on charges of domestic battery and brandishing a weapon. The Associated Press says that Officer Daniel Ray Price has already been released on a $100,000 bond. According to police, Price was arrested based on complaints made last month, including an incident which took place at a local hospital while the officer was in uniform. If convicted, Price faces 2 years behind bars and $1,500 in fines. The former chief of police in Red Bay, Alabama, was indicted on corruption charges this week. The Associated Press reports that Chief Ronald Boatwright was charged with 3 counts of violating the state's ethics laws by using his position for personal gain. He's accused of extorting money from an inmate in exchange for lowering criminal charges. Boatwright is facing up to 20 years in jail for each charge. A police officer in Bensonville, Illinois, has been suspended for 30 days after being found guilty on departmental charges relating to the shooting of an unarmed man 1 year ago. According to the Chicago Daily Herald, Officer Don Purley was found guilty last month of firing his weapon when his life was not threatened, reckless use of his weapon, and incompetence. On Monday, he was suspended without pay for 30 days. On March 17, 2004, Purley was investigating a report of a strange noise coming from outside an apartment complex when he accidentally shot the superintendent of the building. The superintendent of the building was the person who had called the police for help. A former Denver, Colorado police officer has been charged with lying about still being a police officer so he could ride along with police in a neighboring community. According to the Rocky Mountain News, former officer Andrew Racer was riding along with police in Westminster, Colorado, when they received an anonymous call informing them that Racer was no longer a police officer and he was arrested for false representation. Racer, who had been on the Denver force since 2001, was fired in September 2004. During his time in the department, he was investigated 21 times for excessive use of force. The New York Post is reporting this week that the police department in Southold, New York, is under investigation by the State Attorney General's office. The investigation is the result of a pattern of complaints against the Southold Police Department, alleging brutality and intimidation. A source claims that a series of interviews where various complaints were heard was held last summer. There are a series of complaints against the Southold police that are already matters of public record. One man claims he was beaten by a Southold officer in 2003 after he refused to be taken to a police station. The man who was beaten was never charged with a crime. Another man claims that in 2003 he had his head slammed repeatedly into a truck by a police officer until he lost consciousness. The victim of that beating says police told him, "You have no fucking rights." The victim also says that he was harassed by police after he filed his complaint and that officers altered reports about the incident after the complaint was filed. Another complaint alleges that police poked and gouged a man's eyes until they bled, also in 2003. The Post says they spoke with a female Southold resident who said the police said they would not enforce a protection order against her boyfriend because he was friendly with several officers. So far, no charges have been laid resulting from the investigation. A police officer in Lawton, Texas, has been charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon after an unarmed man claims he was shot 3 weeks ago. According to KFDX, reports submitted by the officer, Anthony Aguilera, do not indicate that a firearm was used. The report filed by the officer says that a taser was the only weapon used in the incident. The man, however, was clearly shot and treated at a hospital. Prosecutors have decided against laying public intoxication charges against the victim of the shooting for the time being. Officer Aguilera was cleared of any wrongdoing in the shooting death of an unarmed man 4 years ago. If found guilty in the most recent shooting, he faces up to 10 years in prison. A Minneapolis, Minnesota mother and daughter who claimed they were beaten by a police officer in 2002 were awarded a settlement worth more than $350,000 by the city this week. According to an Associated Press account, the woman made an illegal U-turn in front of her house before she and her 75-year-old mother were roughed up by Officer Philip Hogquist. The officer subsequently resigned from the police department. A police officer in Green Cove Springs, Florida, was arrested this week for tipping off his roommate that he was the focus of a police investigation. According to WJXT, Officer William Rogers was charged with disclosure of confidential criminal justice information after telling his roommate that the 14-year-old he had been chatting with online was really a police officer trying to set him up. Rogers faces up to 5 years in prison if convicted. A police officer in Hernando, Mississippi, has resigned after being accused of excessive use of force by his fellow officers. An Associated Press report says that Officer Kimmons Gray resigned last week after an investigation into the complaint. The investigation was started after two officers came forward last week with the allegations that Gray beat the man during his February 16th arrest for public intoxication. The case has been turned over to the local district attorney, but no criminal charges have been filed against the officer as of yet. A probe into cheating on department exams has led to the firing of one officer, the demotion of another, and an attempt to revoke the pension of a retired police chief in Providence, Rhode Island. A report from NBC 10 in Providence says that Sergeant Tanya Harris was fired for receiving the exam answer key from Chief Urbano Prignano in 1996 and then lying about it under oath. Sergeant Rhonda Kessler was demoted and suspended without pay for 6 months for a similar infraction. A 16-month probe also led to the recent firings of two other unnamed officers, and charges against other officers are expected in the near future. A police officer in Fairchance, Pennsylvania, has been suspended without pay indefinitely this week in connection to a beating outside of a Uniontown bar. According to WNEP, the officer, Ken Bittinger, was arrested the week before and charged with aggravated assault, simple assault, harassment, and disorderly conduct. A police officer in Wayland, Massachusetts, has been suspended without pay. The Metro West Daily News reports that Officer Robert McCoy was placed on suspension last week, but are not providing any further information about the nature of the officer's offense. McCoy had been working with the Wayland Department since 2002. Two police officers in Boston were sentenced this week for recruiting false witnesses to cover up the police beating of a teenager in June 2000. The Boston Globe reports that Sergeant Joseph Lamour beat the teen after he drove by a police station and made an obscene gesture towards the officer. Officer Joseph Polito was accused of asking his friends to lie under oath to protect Lamour. Both were found guilty by a jury in October of obstruction of justice, witness tampering, and perjury. Lamour was sentenced to 4 years behind bars and Polito to three. Both are free until April 5th when they begin serving their sentences. A Middleton, New York police officer has been indicted in connection to a conspiracy to embezzle money from a local retirement home. An account in the Times-Herald Record says that Officer Bill Malia was recruited by his co-conspirator to serve as a ghost employee whose pay was collected by the co-conspirator, who was also the CEO of the retirement home, after the officer had the checks cashed. Malia, who has been on disability for over a year, was suspended on Monday. He has been charged with second and third degree grand larceny and conspiracy. A trial of a New York City police officer who killed an unarmed art restorer in a warehouse where he worked in May 2003 was declared a mistrial this week after jurors failed to come to a verdict. According to Associated Press, the officer, Brian Conroy, had testified that the West African immigrant had attempted to grab the officer's weapon during what he described as a life-and-death struggle. Other witnesses testified that the victim had not committed any crime, did not speak English well, was not a threat to the officer, and had no motive to attack the officer. The victim's family has filed a $150 million lawsuit against the officer and the city. Two former New York City detectives were arrested this week and charged in connection with eight killings, which prosecutors claim they took part in on behalf of organized crime figures. The crimes are alleged to have occurred when one or both of the two were on active duty. According to a litany of press reports, Louis Eppolito and Stephen Caracappa were both long suspected of ties to the mafia. At one time, the officers were paid $4,000 a month for their services, which included, in addition to their role in the killings, the sharing of information regarding police investigations with their organized crime friends. The two have been charged with racketeering conspiracy, obstruction of justice, money laundering, and other crimes. The two are facing life in prison if convicted. Next up is our weekly review of Taser news.
3,170 tasers.
But I think it only gives the person that we're equipping with a taser a sense of, I really know what I'm doing here. And it's like when I know if I shoot somebody with a 45, I can really hurt you.
Yes.
But I know that up front.
The taser device is really not a racial device. I mean, the officer's use and deployment of a taser is predicated on the suspect's behavior and the officer's training.
He will not bow, and he will not fight them. They killed my son in cold blood.
I feel like they should use some other form of force. Especially if it's going to stop someone hard, so...
A police officer in Berwyn, Illinois, used a stun gun on a 17-year-old high school student at school this week. The stun gun was used after the police officer and a school security guard had difficulty forcing the student into the principal's office. After being shot with the taser, the student suffered a seizure and was taken to hospital in an ambulance. A police officer in Newark, New Jersey, used a taser on a 15-year-old who had been involved in a schoolyard fight this week. The student was arrested and charged with assaulting a police officer. A test run of 14 tasers by the Milwaukee Police Department has ended with the decision to shelve the weapons until data gathered about their usefulness can be evaluated. During the one-year pilot project, 52 Milwaukee police officers used tasers 262 times. A man in Indianapolis, Indiana, died last Thursday after being shot with a police taser. A man in Lake City, Florida, died last Friday after being shot by a police taser. A police officer in Pensacola, Florida, resigned last Friday after an investigation revealed that he had used a taser improperly on a jailed prisoner. Officer Raymond McPhail was caught on tape using the stun gun on a man who was guilty of impaired driving while questioning the man at a jail. Two state senators in Florida are calling for a statewide ban on taser use until their effects can be studied thoroughly. They point to 18 Florida deaths of people who had been shocked by one of the devices. The senators say that Taser International has only tested the product on pigs and dogs and not on humans. And they also expressed concerns that stun guns had been used on both children and the elderly. We'll have more on stun guns later in this program. In addition to the killings already mentioned in this week's program, police also killed people this week in Vallejo, California, Los Angeles, California, Boca Raton, Florida, Miami, Florida, Scappoosie, Oregon, Edmonton, Alberta, and New Haven, Connecticut. Next up, we'll listen to a report concerning the brutal actions of the Toronto Police Department at a peaceful rally on the campus of York University in January. This report was produced by Charlotte Scott and combines location recordings from the January 20th protest with an interview with student activist Isabel McDonald, who describes what happened on that day.
On January 20th, which was the day of Bush's inauguration, there were a small group of York University students and community activists who held a small demonstration in Very Hall, which is a space that has historically been used for rallies at York University. And they organized this rally in defiance of the university's ban on unauthorized assemblies on campus and the ban, a very recent ban, on all events in Very Hall. And the event was about wrapping up. There were maybe 40 people who came out. There was a megaphone that was being used, which is also contrary to York's rules. And the students were talking about links between York University and the Bush administration, and specifically the role of corporations like Lockheed Martin, major weapons manufacturer that has manufactured weapons that have been used against Iraqi civilians, as well as oil companies such as Esso and Imperial Oil that have also made contributions to York University. The demonstration was just about to wrap up when six officers from the Toronto Police's Division 31, which is a division known for the abuses that it commits against black youth living around where York University is located, especially around the Jane Finch community. So these cops came in, and within about 2 minutes of their arriving on the scene, they began attacking the protesters. The first person who was knocked down was the person who was using the megaphone, and students were extremely upset to be seeing their friend being beaten by the cops. at least one person sort of like was trying to hold on to this, to the first person who was being, the first protester who was being beaten by the police. And then the police started beating the people who were trying to hold on to him and prevent him from being beaten. In total, I saw at least two people being hit by the police. There was no violence on the part of the protesters against the police.
Did they give any sort of warning before they started attacking people?
I did see the police. One police officer saying you have to leave, but they only gave 2 minutes. That was 2 minutes before they started attacking people, and not everybody heard them say that. This was all in plain view of the York community. This is a very central location on the York campus. After they had beaten a couple of students and arrested a few students, they started dragging those they'd arrested down a hall. And we heard the police officers saying, "Now, what room was it again? What room are we bringing them to?" But this indicated that there had been some kind of provision made between York security and the police. And this is very concerning to those of us who are members of the York community, because it implies that the university set aside a room for the police to interrogate students. There was no need for that. They could have just brought the people that they had arrested out to a car. But in the first place, there was no need for the police to come onto campus. There was no damage that was being inflicted or no threat to either property or people at York. So it's a big question as to why the administration decided to let the police come onto the campus. So then they dragged students into a room. They dragged them down the hall into a room and closed the door. And there was one student who was so badly beaten that he had to be hospitalized. It was completely unprovoked attack on protesters and on the rights of students and other community members who were there protesting that day. And the response has been one of general outrage from lots of different constituencies within the university. We've had letters of support from over 300 faculty members, also from faculty associations across Canada and from student governments across Canada. And the CFS has decried what happened, and it's gotten a lot of coverage from the Canadian Association of University Teachers as well. They had a front page article about it. And the York administration has really not taken responsibility for its actions that day, and has defended what happened and is using the same line as the police, erroneously stating that the protesters assaulted the police officers. Now, why the police officers were there in the first place is the real question. But on all the video footage that we have of that day, there's no indication that the police were assaulted by protesters. Like, there's absolutely no indication of that. You just see the cops coming and starting to beat the students.
Free speech! This is an unprovoked attack!
What did he do, guys? What did he do other than talk?
I thought this was
What's he charged with?
What was the mainstream press's reaction to these events?
It was extremely skewered coverage. Mostly it was the Toronto Star that picked up the story. And if you compare the press release that was issued by the police and the press release and the articles that the Star ran in the days subsequent to these events, almost identical. The quotes from protesters were taken completely out of context, and there weren't even very many protesters who were quoted. So it was obviously a case of the mainstream media just going with their big institutional sources, like the police that they rely on, and not doing a lot of investigation or other research or consulting alternative sources.
Is there anything happening right now in terms of any sort of conclusion or any continuation to this situation that you know of?
The students and one other person who was arrested that day are facing criminal charges, and they're going to be going through court cases. Very likely these cases will be dropped at the last minute because the police are not going to have any evidence that they were assaulted by the protesters, which is what they're pursuing these criminal charges against them for. It's unlikely that the court cases will be successful, but nonetheless these people who were arrested are facing these ongoing court battles. There has been some interesting mobilizing that has been going on the York campus since these events. There have been some alliances made with community organizers from the Jane Finch community, trying to work together on police brutality issues. There's been a lot of interest in issues around how decisions at York are made, and there are some faculty that have gotten on board and are trying to reform the university's system of governance.
Thanks to Charlotte Scott for producing that report. Stun guns, devices used by police to incapacitate subjects using a 50,000 volt jolt of electricity, have increasingly come under fire because of concerns over their safety. A November report from Amnesty International raised a variety of concerns relating to the use of stun guns by police forces and corrections services in North America. The report also found that more than 70 deaths were linked to the use of tasers since 2001. Since the release of the Amnesty International report, we have documented on this program an average of 2 taser-related deaths each week. Current news reports estimate the number of North American deaths linked to the use of tasers at over 100. Earlier tonight, I spoke with Patty Gilman, whose brother was killed by a stun gun used by Vancouver, British Columbia police in June 2004. Since that time, she's become outspoken against the use of tasers and recently gave a deputation to the Toronto Police Services Board as they considered the question of whether or not to grant a police request for more of the weapons. I spoke with Patty Gilman from her home in Ottawa, Ontario.
On the 25th of June, my parents got a telephone call. They live in Prince Edward Island, and they had a telephone call from the Vancouver Police to advise them that my brother had died, and they led my mother, who spoke with them initially, they led her to believe that he died of a heart attack due to cocaine overdose. And that was sort of the cause of death that we were given at that time. And on the 23rd of July, exactly a month, they told us on the 25th of June that he had died on the 23rd of June. So exactly a month later, on the 23rd of July, the Vancouver police held a news conference to advise the public that they had used a taser on my brother. It took them a month to disclose that information.
Were you aware of that before that time?
No, we were not. No, I got an email from a friend who said that he had seen something on the news and that I should probably watch the news. So we watched it with the rest of Canada on CBC News.
And what was your reaction to learning that your brother had been shot with a taser?
We had no idea what a taser was until then, and we've sure learned a lot since then. We were horrified. It was an awful, awful thing to find out, and especially to find it out in that way, not to have been told by the police personally, you know, beforehand that they were going to announce this. It was devastating.
Do you know how long the Vancouver police had been using tasers prior to that?
How long they had been using them prior to that, I'm not exactly sure. I do know that the Victoria Police Department was the first in Canada to deploy tasers, but I'm not sure how long Vancouver was using them. And, yeah, so 3 weeks after that, after the first news conference, they held a second news conference to suddenly advise that at the time of the incident, there was a fire in the Continental Hotel where my brother lived. And they said that the fire made the use of the taser more urgent, and that what had started out as an arrest had actually turned into a rescue operation, and they had to rescue him from this supposedly burning building. And meanwhile, witnesses have told us that the fire was a small electrical one in a first-floor apartment, and that it was quickly extinguished, and 90% of the people that lived there did not evacuate.
Do you know why they chose to use this device? Did they offer an explanation of, like, had your brother done something, or?
We don't have any details from them yet. All we have is sort of from what witnesses have said. They've said that he was having a seizure, what appeared to be a seizure, and required medical assistance.
Prior to being shocked?
Prior to being shocked, yes. And apparently the person at the hotel front desk called for medical assistance, and the police instead arrived first. And I think, you know, I think that has a lot to do with the address of the building.
It's in the downtown east side, right?
The downtown east side. And I think that's just, you know, the first response is send the police.
When you found out that your brother was shot with a taser, and you hadn't heard about tasers up till that point, could you maybe describe a little bit of the learning curve that you went through with these weapons?
Oh, boy. Thank God for the Internet. The learning curve was incredible, fast and furious. I'd say within, you know, a day or a day and a half, we were on top of what a taser was and could easily describe to people how they worked. And, you know, I mean, just a visit to Taser International's website would give tons of information on what a taser is.
So you decided at some point along the line, because I know you made it a deputation to the Toronto Police Services Board last week, you decided to become a lot more outspoken about the use of tasers.
Yes.
What was the impetus for that? Was it that you decided you had a responsibility to speak about it because no one else was?
Has basically been what has driven me over the past several months. I mean, it'll be a year in June. Has been the fact that nobody else seems to be talking about it, and nobody else is making any noise in Canada anyway, that from what I can tell, anti-taser. There's a lot of pro-taser stuff going on, and, you know, what originally led me to get involved with the Toronto taser issue was reading a quote from Pam McConnell in the Toronto Star saying that she thought that these weapons needed further study, and she was loath to roll them out without there being further study done on the taser.
And lo and behold, several months later, we have approved the use of at least 100 tasers for the Toronto Police Force.
Yeah.
And the studies have yet to be done. Are you aware of the rationale behind their choice of making that decision? Or?
I am aware of the rationale of their making, a lot of their rationale. I think that in the wake of the Deputy Chief Coroner of Ontario's conclusions and statements to the board, I believe that led them to expand their taser use in Toronto.
Now, this guy's name is James Cairns, and
yes,
as you've pointed out, he is the Ontario Deputy Chief Coroner. What is it that he is not seeing that other researchers are starting to see?
Well, I think Dr. Cairns has an opinion, an unshakable opinion, it would seem, that he told me, in fact, on the telephone last week. I called him because I wanted to challenge him on the statements and conclusions that he's made. It is his opinion that if you die of a taser, you die immediately. That theory is being blown out of the water now by people like James Ruggieri down in the United States, who's saying that some of the effects of tasers may not even show up immediately. But Dr. Cairns has it in his head that, for some reason, that if you die of an electrical shock, you die immediately. Not a minute or an hour or a day later, but immediately.
Is there any science to back that up?
Well, his science, I believe, from what he said, comes from contacts that he has at the hospital for sick children. I believe what he was referring to was cardiac specialists at that hospital that he has consulted with. I simply wanted to ask Dr. Cairns if he had seen the autopsy results from my brother's death in particular. Knowing the autopsy hadn't even been completed in Robert's case, and his family and I haven't even seen any of it yet, I was quite sure that Dr. Cairns hadn't either, but I wanted to be sure of that. And he did confirm that he has not seen any of those autopsy results, nor has he seen any autopsy results of other taser-related deaths outside of Ontario. Somehow he has concluded, based on his opinion that you die immediately, that all 9 taser-related deaths in Canada had nothing to do with tasers, without even seeing the autopsy results. And it seems to me the ministry and the medical officer of health, who gave a deposition to the board, and ex-chief of police Julian Fantino, and most of the police services board members have relied on his expertise in their support of taser use. And that's pretty scary.
What kind of information did you have in your deputation?
What I wrote to them, I basically described my brother's death and reminded them that 9 Canadians have died after being shocked with taser, and told them about how many people have died in North America since 1999. I told them about the fact that several of these individuals had been shocked numerous times, like the man in Toledo who was shocked 9 times,
mm-hmm.
4 times while he was being arrested, and 5 times while he was already when he was already in cells.
For next to no reason.
Next to no reason, right. He was loitering or something.
Mm-hmm.
There was also, I told them about a judge in Edmonton who recently concluded that a police officer abused use of force and used cruel and unusual treatment when he shocked an inebriated teen, not to subdue him, but to rouse him from the back seat of a car. And I wanted to remind them that these are being used in brutal fashion. And I also wanted to remind them that it would appear that in North America that the tasers are not being used as an alternative to deadly force, but they're being used to subdue petty criminals or petty offenders, not even criminals, but offenders, people who haven't even been arrested with anything, people who are walking away or not immediately obeying instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to tell them about some of the studies that are being done, and that was pretty much it. And I also told them that I thought that Dr. Cairns needed to be challenged in his assumptions as well.
Are you aware of anyone in the local medical or scientific community that's speaking out against these weapons right now?
Just the Amnesty International. Some gentleman from the Amnesty International organization also had a deputation, a letter, as part of the board package.
Are you encouraged by the fact that many police departments across North America are now having second thoughts?
Very much so.
Is it your feeling that they're... I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you don't think that they've gone quite far enough in questioning these things.
I don't think they have, but I'm pleased to report that they've started to. Police departments across North America are tightening their guidelines, and some of them are even backing off taser deployments altogether, citing safety concerns and lack of independent study and research. And, you know, that makes me question also Julian Fantino's statement that Toronto's taser policy mustn't be overly specific. And I strongly disagree with that, and I think that the taser policy, whatever taser policy Toronto comes up with, must be sufficiently specific.
For example, there would be age restrictions and...
Age restrictions, just so specific that it would prevent abuse of the taser and the possible deadly consequences. It has to be specific enough that tasers are only used as an alternative or last resort to deadly force. You know, it's not the taser that I have a problem with. It's the deployment of the taser and how they're used and the lack of policies. And I think, you know, it could be, when used properly, it could be a not bad thing for a police officer to have when he's faced it, you know, with a dangerous situation. I wouldn't call for tasers to be dropped completely from the arsenal, but I think that they have to have very, very strict policies on when and where they're used.
There's the coroner's inquest coming up in Vancouver in your brother's case. Well, what are you hoping the coroner's inquest will accomplish for you?
I'm hoping we'll get some answers.
Mm-hmm.
That is mainly what I'm looking for, and my family is looking for right now, is answers to the questions that we've been holding on to for all these months. We don't even have a cause of death yet in Robert's case, and we have so many questions about what happened that night. And we look forward to getting the answers, and hopefully that forum will be where we get them.
Are you hoping, or do you know, the upcoming coroner's inquest they're having in Ontario at this spring in London is going to take a look at the issue of tasers in general, in addition to the specific taser-related death that they're looking at? Is that the case in the Vancouver inquest as well?
Well, actually, as a matter of fact, it is. After my brother died, the Police Complaints Commissioner in British Columbia ordered a two-pronged investigation, really, into, one, taser use in general in British Columbia, and two, an in-depth investigation into my brother's death and how he died and what happened, you know, that night. I think, you know, there's so many studies and groups and reviews going on, you know, with regard to the taser right now, that, my God, it would be nice if everybody got together and did it in one place. You know, there's got to be 50 studies going on by different people, and they're all going to come up with different answers and different conclusions, and it boggles my mind that somebody can't take charge and say, let's get together here and do this for all of North America.
That's all for this week. Tune into this station next week for more. Email your comments and story ideas to ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's show. From CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, I'm Ron Anisich. Every week we end Bad Cop, No Donut with a song. This week, it's Trains and Cops by This Bike is a Pipe Bomb.
He can hold.